Hello, and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today is Topher Downham. Topher is an avid outdoorsman in the city of Boulder, Colorado. He's also the Education and Outreach Program Manager for the Accessibility at the City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks, as well as the owner and founder of Omni Accessible. Topher, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, David.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, based on your history and background and just kind of yourself, I think we'd really like to focus the episode today on not only learning a little bit more about you personally, but also kind of the world of wheelchair accessibility in the open world, as it were, or out in nature. And if that sounds all right to you, I just kind of got a list of questions I thought we'd run through.
Sounds great.
Perfect. Well, let's start maybe with your injury. You know, what happened and how did that kind of lead to your outdoorsy kind of path that you've been on so far?
Great. So back in school, last semester of college here at University of Colorado.
Okay.
Here in Boulder. One semester left. I was just hanging out with some of my Norwegian buddies. School just got back in and two of us got separated from everybody else while we were out at the bars. And this was before cell phones. Mm-hmm. So we could not find them. So we decided to go for a swim late at night. And we climbed over the fence to his pool. And he walked in and I ran to the edge thinking, should I cannonball or should I dive? And at the last minute, I decided to dive into the pool and put my arms out, hit the water, thought I'd cruise to the other side. And just put my arms down to my side. And instead of cruising to the other side, I ended up smacking my head in the bottom.
Oh,
I mean, it was only about 3 feet deep. Yeah.
Wow.
Couldn't move my arms, couldn't move my legs, and just held my breath and hope my buddy could save me. And
yeah.
he figured it out. Something was wrong. And he lifted me up and he's like, are you faking it? And I gasped for air and was like, no, I think I broke my neck.
Oh.
And he was able to get me out of the pool, ran and called 911, got an ambulance there. And within 6 hours, I was getting surgery on the lower two vertebrae of my neck.
Oh, my
C6
gosh.
And C7. Yeah. It was I was a college student and didn't really know the severity of it.
Right.
So
Were you awake the whole time or did you kind of go in and out of consciousness at all?
Yeah, completely awake. And I was like,
okay, wow.
They stuck that tube down my throat. And I was just like, can I get this thing out of here? And
yeah.
They did surgery. They took two cadaver bones, took out all the broken bones, stuck the cadaver bone in, and took a titanium plate and fused 5, 6, and 7 together. And I came out of the surgery and the doctor came in and was like, hey, go ahead and grab my hand. And I could move my hands a little bit, but I couldn't grab it.
Yeah.
And I could use my biceps. And my first question was like, hey, when am I going to be able to use my legs again? We got a hockey game in a couple of days.
Right.
And he was like, let's focus on your arms first. He didn't want to say I'd never be able to walk again, but he wanted me to focus on something that might come quicker.
Yeah.
And after he left, I was like, oh, shit, I think I messed up a lot more than I thought I did.
Well, and so you said C5 through C7 are all fused?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a titanium plate.
Got it. And that qualifies you as a quad just based on location, correct?
Exactly.
Got it. But you do have some function of your upper extremities, or where is kind of your mobility at today?
Yeah. So I basically have my arms back, but it's the hands that I have a lot of women too.
Got it. So then I guess, you know, having gone to school in Colorado, and clearly, you know, you were energetic youngster with swimming and hockey and all that sort of stuff. What drew you towards the outdoors? Were you always big in doing outdoorsy things even before the injury, or was it really kind of an escape post-injury that you found a new love for?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My family was really into the outdoors. I grew up in Lander, Wyoming, okay. where National Outdoor Leadership School is. And like every weekend, we were up in the mountains, you know, bouldering or having picnics, skating up on a pond, just always doing something with the family. So it was kind of instilled in me. I was kind of actually planning on trying to get a job with National Outdoor Leadership School when I graduated.
Yeah.
For a couple of years. So, yeah, was really into the outdoors before the accident.
Got it. Got it. So then as far as like getting involved with the Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks Department, how did you kind of stumble into that opportunity? Were you, did you recognize that there was just a huge lack of accessibility for people in your situation, or what really kind of drew you into that, I guess, segment of business?
That's a great question. And important. I was dealing with all the factors of grievance, all those like anger and denial and all that.
Totally.
And that anger really came up. And like every time that I was like in bed and trying to get like a cath in and it wasn't going or something was going on. You know how you kind of get that like, oh, I'm just going to sit here and mope.
Yeah.
Or I should get outside. I always chose the outside, even though it was hard to do.
Right.
And I found that getting out on a trail and exploring all the trails around Boulder was so awesome. Like I'd be out there and I'd get out my aggressions, just pushing as hard as I could, and then feeling that connection with nature again.
Yeah.
In that process, I was like, man, I should start like kind of taking notes on these trails.
Right.
And this would be great for other people too. And so I started doing that, and along came like all these different agencies within the city, like Dinah Snow from Parks and Rec and Steve Mertz from Open Space and Mountain Parks. They all were like, we need to make a guidebook of all the different trails around Boulder.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I volunteered with them and I went out and checked every single trail, and Dinah checked every single site, and we put together a guidebook and made maps and everything for people with disabilities.
That's incredible.
It was pretty cool. It was a great reason for me to be out on the trails too, besides like just being angry.
Absolutely. But what I'm interested in is like when you decided you're going to start going out and seeing these trails and being part of nature again and, you know, letting anger out, whatever, did you already have some sort of wheelchair that allowed you to do this? Or, you know, how did you start figuring out what equipment was required to even make this possible? And, you know, are the trails rated for, oh, do you have an off-road, you know, do you have an off-road wheelchair versus a street wheelchair? And, you know, how did that all kind of play out?
There was really nothing written down. So I was out there kind of exploring and hoping
getting
that
stuck.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times I'd have somebody come with me to help measure, and we'd have to get out of a few sticky situations a few times. Like, oh shit, I'm going to roll off into the river right now. You better grab me. But yeah, I basically used like a sport chair with, do you know, the cyclocross tires, like kind of skinnier tires for a bike.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I use. Pretty much the same tread. And that way I can use it on the trail or on the street.
Got it.
So that works pretty well as long as it's hard packed enough.
Very interesting. Are there other, you know, kind of accessibility tools or adaptive equipment that have kind of been added since you began doing this? Is there new equipment that is making it easier and more accessible now to more people?
Yeah, it really interesting. So originally, like the only thing for kind of getting out there on bikes was the downhill adaptive mountain bikes, and they didn't have pedals or anything. You just basically used gravity. Mm. Which is, I mean, we could talk an hour about that. It's just so fun.
Yeah.
Like getting a lift to the top and then, you know, bombing through the trees and dropping off rocks and just having a blast. Like another way to connect with nature a little faster than just on the wheelchair.
Totally.
So that's what they had originally. And I totally did that. But now they have like just all these different tools, the power assist movement and just all the access to motors and electronics has mm-hmm. really changed the accessibility. I have my own reactive adaptations bike called the Mako.
Okay.
And that's, you know, I pedal that, but it's got power assist. And if I get stuck somewhere, it's a three-wheel bike and it can pretty much go anywhere. But if I do get stuck, I can throttle it too to get out of things. And if, you know, like with my disability, I don't sweat. So if I'm out way out on a trail and it's getting way too hot, I can book it back, just throttle it back to some shade if I need to.
Oh, very cool. So it does have the ability to kind of take over the power feed for you if needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to touch on one thing there, actually kind of two things. You started leading into one of my future questions, but before we get there, so for the people listening, when you're talking about your bike, you're talking about a arm pedaled kind of three wheel, you sit down with your legs out kind of situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then the other question that you started talking about was really, so I was kind of talking about limitations as far as equipment is concerned, but we didn't really talk about limitations that come along with the injury itself. And you mentioned that you don't sweat. And I think that's one of those things that most people don't know about people who have experienced, you know, certain spinal cord injuries, that's a thing. I also know, you know, blood pressure is a big issue for people with spinal cord injuries. So do you want to just talk a little bit more about maybe the physical limitations that come along with the injury as well?
Yeah, sure. It's basically the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. They get all messed up because they come through the neck. And so, you know, all the sympathetic responses, like if you saw a mountain lion, like what would happen to your body?
Yeah.
Your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, you start sweating. Like you get injected with
adrenaline.
Like, adrenaline, yeah.
Right.
So none of that happens for me. So like I don't sweat, my heart rate doesn't go past like 115. Mm. So even working out, I don't get past that anaerobic threshold. Low blood pressure, I have that unless something is going wrong with my body.
Right.
Then we have this thing called autonomic dysreflexia. And that's when you start sweating, your blood pressure goes up. It's like if your bladder is plugged or if your bowels are plugged or if you're like sitting on a nail or something. And then everything goes wrong at the same time. And it feels like your body's just going to explode. Your head's going to explode and your body's going to explode.
I mean, that's, you know, I think it's hard for people to imagine not having those things automatically regulated. And, you know, it seems like, oh, well, he's getting out in nature and doing a good job. He's working out. He's, you know, getting in that threshold. He's, you know, probably in great shape. And it's almost disheartening to hear, you know, like even if you're pushing yourself really hard, you're not necessarily hitting that zone that your body really, really benefits from. So I think that's, I don't know, I guess I personally hadn't even thought about that, which is pretty crazy.
Really interesting, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's an interesting, you know, we say it as like a limitation. It's not really like a struggle, but it's more a limitation because it's really just kind of something that you have no control over, especially post-injury. So
it's, can I just add one thing too about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of funny, like I don't sweat, and that's like probably the worst part of it, because you overheat so much, and it's almost like having a heat stroke.
Right.
And I'll tell somebody that, and they're like, "Oh, I wish I didn't sweat," and I'm like, "Yeah, no, you don't wish that you didn't sweat."
Totally.
It's amazing, like how much that helps, and people don't even realize it.
Right. Well, and sweat's a big thing. I think it's also, you know, what else is interesting about that is like living somewhere like Minnesota in which it's so cold and you can't regulate your body temperature. You know, being outside for a short period of time is incredibly dangerous because if your body goes below that threshold of what's okay, it's very hard for your body to heat back up to a safe temperature. And so, you know, I think both levels of extremes, it's something that you don't really ever think about.
Definitely.
So let's talk a little more about the trails and, you know, your work with the open space and mountain parks organization. How did you guys, how do you determine whether or not a trail was quote unquote accessible? Was it like, let's send in Topher. If he comes out the other side, it's accessible, or is it, was there more to it?
Yeah, that's basically it. Okay. there are guidelines, and they've improved throughout the years. And there's one called the FSTAG, Forest Service Trail Accessibility Guidelines. And that's got like what is the maximum slope? Like, you want to try to keep the slope 8% or less.
Okay.
And you can go over that a little bit. And you want to keep the cross slope at around 2%, maximum about 5%. So that you're not being like, you know, when you're pushing a wheelchair, you don't want your wheelchair to pull you off of a cliff when you're trying to push down the trail.
Right.
Or roll you over. So, yeah, cross slope we're looking at. And how stable is the surface? Is it like hard packed, or are you getting stuck in a bunch of mud or loose gravel? Shade. We're looking at shade. Obstacles. Are there obstacles that are like over 2 inches? And if you have the adaptive wheelchairs, the bikes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to get over those obstacles. But if you're in a wheelchair and trying to get over something that's over 2 inches or 3 inches, it gets pretty tough.
Yeah.
So we're looking at that. And definitely like, are there things growing out of the trail to get in the way? Just all that. And when we originally did it, we actually did a lot of write-up and basically said how hard it was for me.
Yeah.
Like, if I thought it was an easy trail, if I thought it was a medium trail, and just kind of gave that as the background of it. Like, okay, this is a quad out there. This is what, how he ranked it, in a sense.
Kind of like a middle ground. You were the middle ground of, you know, basically the bog standard for the public.
Definitely.
Were there any trail, I'm thinking in my head, like, are there any trails that you listed as like, technically you could try it, it's hard, you know, or like, this is a higher risk one, maybe go with a companion, but like, you could attempt it with a wheelchair? Were there any trails like that, or are those kind of like, I'm assuming with the Parks Department, they don't even want to like encourage people to like go out and try something epic. They probably just say, don't do it. But did you ever have any trails that you were like, these ones are a stretch, but you could try it?
Definitely.
Okay.
You know, my way of thinking was just provide the information to people and let them decide.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you waited for all the trails to get fixed, because there were like some that had just one section that was like super tough. And if you waited for all of them to get fixed, all of us that live now would be dead by then. So I just wanted to get the information out there so people could make their own decisions and maybe go on part of the trail, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's more important than anything, is giving that information to people.
Yeah.
And then letting them decide. But putting in, like in our booklet, we put the hard spots. And I talk about the couple of spots that were difficult for me with lots of obstacles and such. So, yeah, we definitely... we're getting people out there before the trails were completely accessible, for sure.
What about some stories or maybe like a favorite story or historical event in which you were either testing out a trail or doing some you know, some exploration on your own of you just kind of out in nature experiencing a trail with your adaptive equipment? Do you have any great stories or kind of, you know, things you would love to touch on?
So many, but I'm just thinking of one. We were checking out a trail with the adaptive wheelchairs, the mountain bikes, and their power assist. We're out there and it's a pretty narrow trail, so I had to kind of run one wheel on the side. Mm. But fortunately, I was with somebody and I came up this hill and forgot to downshift. And made it about halfway up, and then I got stuck. I couldn't push any further, and if I had gone backwards, I would have tipped over. So I'm holding the pedal with basically my thumb, and if I like let go, it was going to just rip my thumb off.
Oh.
And I'm just holding it, and like really hoping that my buddy that was just above me like turned around and saw that I was like struggling, and he did, and. Man, it sounds like all my stories are like a buddy saving my ass. But he turned around. He's like, "You all right?" And I'm like, "No, I'm going to lose my thumb if you can't help grab this.
Yeah.
He came running down and got behind me and pushed me up the hill. But yeah, those little points where you forget to do something and like downshift,
right,
can be pretty severe if you're not careful.
No doubt. So you mentioned, you know, having a buddy with you on that one. You know, I'm sure in a lot of these instances, it makes sense to go out and be on a trail with a friend or, you know, someone to visit with as you're out there. But I know when we kind of originally were introduced to one another, you talked a lot about, you know, doing things solo and doing solo adventuring, even outside of the country and traveling the world on your own as someone who's a quadriplegic. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that and maybe what you've learned about from doing that and things like that.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to digress a little bit.
Okay.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
So I just got back from that 5 weeks over in Scandinavia.
Oh.
And just went over there by myself and have friends over there and have relatives, but and hung out with them. But along the way, I was doing these different adventures, like bike riding and out checking out a trail in Denmark.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. Like when you're on your own, you kind of get forced into like meeting people and asking for help and just kind of pushing yourself and really kind of expanding as a person.
Right.
So, and magic happens when you're out there. I end up on these adventures that I never thought I would do. Mm-hmm. And with these new people. And I mean, we could talk hours just about that, but I'm just going to give you one example. I went to the Forest Tower over in Denmark. It's about 2 hours south of Copenhagen.
Okay.
And I had to take a bus and a train and then wheel a mile to get to the path to get up to the Forest Tower.
Yeah.
This giant like hourglass shaped thing that gets above the canopy. So I get there and I'm like asking the reception about like, yeah, can I do it? And like, yeah, we'll give you a scooter if you want. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna man it up there. I'm
yeah.
just gonna use my arm. And they're like, all right. And they kind of you can tell they're like, ooh man, this guy's in trouble.
And, all right, we're gonna watch this one.
Yeah, totally. And I thought it was going to be like 8% grade, and I get started like the first 100 feet, and it's like 16% grade.
Oh wow!
And I'm like all the way forward, trying to push the wheels, and they're slipping a little bit. And I'm like, I mean, this is like that situation I was telling you about before.
Yep.
Where it's like, oh crap, I can't go forward, I can't go backwards. And this Swiss family comes along behind me, and the guy's like, hey, do you need some help? I'm like, oh, that'd be awesome, man.
Right.
He gets me out of that 16% grade and I'm like pushing a little bit. He's like, do you want us to stick around with you some more? And I'm like, yeah, I think I got it. And then I see another steep hill and I'm like, yeah, if you guys are going up there too, I'd love the help and companionship. And
yeah,
they stuck with me and it ended up being a really steep boardwalk. And I'm so glad this family helped me, you know, three small kids and the couple. Didn't speak very much English, and I don't speak much French.
Yeah.
But we had a great time together, and by the time we got to the top, we had all smiles, and the kids were, like, so happy they helped out. And,
right. Well, and that's a memory they're going to, you know, have forever, too.
Yeah.
Not right? just you. So,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's just, like, when you allow yourself to be helped, and you allow yourself to be in those situations where you're not just you and a buddy that are helping you out. That's when you kind of get a renewed sense of how awesome people are. Mm-hmm. Like, cause you know, the news is throwing out all this bad, 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 bad. And then you actually meet people and you meet them from all these other countries and they're all like just people like you that want to help out and want to have a good life.
Exactly.
Have that connection.
Totally.
So I kind of digressed from that a little bit, didn't I?
No, I think that was wonderful. It does make me kind of interested in all of your travels around the globe and all these different countries and things. Do you feel like accessibility is taken as seriously in other countries as the United States? Or do you feel like the United States maybe is the one who's not taking it seriously and these other countries are way ahead? Kind of where does accessibility land around the world? And have you noticed big differences?
Yeah, definitely. As far as like like in Scandinavia, the public transportation is set up really good. Excuse me. Most of the things I could do on my own. And if I couldn't, then somebody would help. The thing that I've noticed that happens a lot, like in first world countries, is we have so many rules and people are afraid of being sued because they can't, they won't like help you off a bus that's not accessible if they work on the bus. But you go to like Costa Rica and they're just like, we'll figure out how to make it happen. Like, yeah, we're going to lift you on this shuttle bus and we're going to go have an adventure and we're going to get you on the boat and we're going to get you into the water. And if you can't swim around with the snorkel on, we're going to pull you around. They make it happen. And I love that. I love like where you can like get past all the rules and just make this happen. And,
right.
And, so sometimes it's almost the third world countries that are more accessible because they don't have the rules.
Right. And they're willing to help still.
Yeah.
You know, it's still people willing to help, but they're not worried about any sort of repercussion because they're just more interested in helping.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. Like I got stuck on a bus in Iceland because everybody got off the bus and then the bus driver's like, I can't help you get off of this. And so, well, you should have told me that before everybody got off so I could recruit a couple people.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you learn and you act as a advocate. And I mean, you're basically deputized to be the one that complains about things and try to make them happen.
Right.
So one of my goals in life is just to get other people understanding what the needs are for people with disabilities and get a lot of allies out there that can also be like, hey, this restaurant's not accessible for my buddy. Can you get a ramp put in?
Right.
Where it's not always the people with disabilities that have to complain. Because we could complain every day. We run into issues every day.
Yeah.
And you get tired of complaining. You want to be happy, I think.
Yeah, I can completely imagine that. One of the things I'm interested in your take on is, you know, one of the things I've talked to about with multiple injured people on this podcast is, you know, how do you feel about people approaching you to help? And do you want them to approach you and say, can I help? Or is it more so that you want them to wait until you ask for help? You know, as someone who's not injured like myself, if I see someone like you on a trail or something, clearly my gut instinct is to ask, can I be a helpful? How does that how does that play for your mind and whether or not that's, you know, respectful, and how do we go about navigating that?
That's a great question. And that's actually one thing I talk a lot about on our experiential hikes where we throw everybody in a wheelchair, that's able-bodied.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds like a blast. I would love doing that.
You should come out and we'll put you in one. And
yes, absolutely. I'd love to do that.
It's interesting, and everybody with a disability has a different take on this. I know some people get frustrated with it, but I'm wide open to people asking if I need help.
Yeah.
And I, you know, even if I don't, I try to be nice about it, and I just say, no, I've got this. Like, can you watch me? You want to watch me put my wheelchair in my car?
Right.
And they'll sit there and I'll have a conversation. It's when people just kind of grab the back of the wheelchair and like start pushing you or doing something for you and you're not expecting it. That's pretty annoying, and it can kind of jar your neck. And with those people, I usually have a conversation. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. If you were walking really slow in front of me and I just grabbed your butt and started pushing you up the hill, would that be okay? And they'd be like, no. Like,
yeah.
You're invading my space.
Right. Your wheelchair is part of your personal space when you're in it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, let's try it again. And they'll be like, can I give you a hand up this hill? And if I want help, I'll be like, yeah, sure. No, I got this one, but thanks for asking.
Right.
The other thing that I've noticed too, that I bring up a lot on these hikes is I used to think that like I had to prove that I was like completely on my own and could do things on my own.
Right.
And I realized that, you know, like give and take, like it's a, you think of it as almost black and white, like right. The giver is all white and you're black, or what, vice versa. And it's not like that. It's gray. Like when somebody gives you help, you're actually helping them out too. I mean, you share this common bond, and they feel better about themselves. They just help somebody get into their car or get somebody back up from right. falling over. So you notice, I mean, there's some days when somebody will come up to you and you can tell that they've been having a bad day, but they're still like looking at you like, I'm going to help this guy, even though, you know, I could be off on myself, just complaining about life.
Right.
And you see that in somebody's eyes and you're like, yeah, help me. I would love some help. Even when you don't need help, it's like, let's extend this moment where they're doing something good and they have something to reflect on that day.
Something that's positive. Better than
what they're reflecting. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a really good thing to kind of touch on. And I think it's also something that, how do I want to word this? You know, I think it's something that we fail to recognize all the time, that there are opportunities for us to help one another and find mutual benefit from giving said help. But I also, I can see there being, you know, a mental value in doing something all by yourself and not necessarily needing help. But it's also, you know, that it's a give and take all the time of like, there are probably times in which I'm doing this for myself. I have to do it by myself. This is a personal thing. And then other times where it's like, it's personal, but I'll take a little bit of assistance here and there. Cause clearly you want to help and it would mean something to you.
Yeah. You nailed it.
And finding that kind of balance, is key. Let's kind of shift gears just a tad. I want to talk a little bit about Omni Accessible, the organization that you founded. And you know, what is that organization do that's different from obviously the park service and you know, doing some of that other work that you've done?
That's a great question. I mean part of it's at some point I'm going to be retiring and I'll have my own little company to go off and do little things and stuff.
Yeah.
But part of it's like going bigger. With Open Space, we collaborate with a lot of organizations and we helped out Jeffco a couple of years ago to get bikes themselves. So they're doing a program like ours. And so we're working with them doing that stuff. But I'm trying to go even bigger than that and just help with trails all around the state, all around the country and internationally.
Yeah.
One of my friends set up it's called Ale or Ale Frisbee Golf Center. It's over by Gothenburg and it's huge. They've got like three courses out in the wilderness and they've got like a giant barn with a bar and stuff. And
oh, cool.
If you like Frisbee golf, you should definitely fly over there and check that out.
Yeah.
They've set up glamping and, my buddy, I went to college with him and he's like, let's try to make like an adaptive course here too. And so we're brainstorming. We're trying to figure out like how we can do that and how we can design some equipment to get this new sport going. It's not a new sport, but it's kind of new for people with disabilities.
Totally.
So we're like with Omni, I can like go over there and focus on that and get a whole new sport out there. Like we're looking at adaptive things to make it easier for like a quad like me to throw it.
Right. If you don't have the dexterity to grab onto it, how can you still use your body to be the mechanism that throws the disc, basically?
Yeah, totally. And we know it can be done. I mean, everything's adaptable.
Right. Think of golf even. I mean, I've seen, you know, at MCPF used to always do a golf tournament. We had quads playing golf. So it's incredible.
Definitely. So with Omni Accessible, I'm looking at I can do that. Like in like our program with the city, we have five bikes that we take people out on and, change their mind about like how easy it is to get into the outdoors. I can do that internationally. Like I'd love to set up like something where we have these little pockets in different countries where people with disabilities can come and try them out and use the equipment for free. And I mean, you look at like places that are third world places where you can't afford to buy a bike for $25,000 that I would love to try. Norway makes one called the Exotech, and it's all throttle, four wheels. Like, have something there,
yeah,
like in Africa or something, where they can try them when they want and have a bike shop set up to work with them, to fix them all the time. I'd love to get something going like that all over the world. And that's where Omni Accessible would come in, as opposed to the city of Boulder.
That's incredible. I love that. I think it's a really cool idea. I can't remember. I feel like it was a few years ago. I remember seeing something about an organization that was pushing really hard on creating basically beach going wheelchairs. And they were like publicly available beach going wheelchairs with big kind of inflatable wheels that allowed you to roll on the sand and not sink in and get stuck all the time. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that I don't think people aren't normally thinking about. Oh, if I was in a wheelchair, I can't just roll onto the beach. Like, the beach is off limits now. Or trails that I used to love hiking down in Arizona. You know, those things are off limits until you have the right equipment to do it. And the fact that equipment is becoming more and more prevalent and available is huge. And obviously it's organizations like yours that are making that so. So that's awesome.
You know, I was just thinking that, you know, when you were talking about that, I got to do a 2-week trip with Impossible Dream this year too.
Oh, cool.
Completely accessible catamaran, 58 foot long. It's ocean going, designed for a quad to be able to use it.
Oh, wow.
Some quad sailed from one side of the Atlantic to the other by himself.
All by himself.
They had a caretaker.
Yeah.
Caregiver, not caretaker. That would be if they died. a caregiver to help with if there was any problems. And they had the Guinness Book of World Records proctor there to make sure that he was doing it all by himself. But
right.
he did it. And there's like an elevator, like a lift that takes you down into your own cabin. Like, the whole thing is accessible. And
incredible.
You would never have thought that, you know, 20 years ago that we could be doing that. And here we are, like, adapting things to quads and to paras and everybody.
No doubt. I feel like this has just been really kind of exciting and motivating to talk with you today and learn all about these different accessibility things and what is all out there. And, you know, for my last question today, what I was really hoping to push out to the audience is, what information would you give someone who either is recently injured or might be, you know, living in a wheelchair and have been for a long time, but they've never really done the get out in nature and experience, you know, trail riding, getting on these adaptable tools. You know, what advice do you have for someone who's looking to get into it?
Man, look online, try to find a local organization that's doing stuff like this where you can get your toes wet.
I mean, yeah.
Even if you can't feel them. And just try to be out there and try new things, because those little things, we can't do the same thing that we used to be able to do, but there's a lot of things out there that we can do. And if you can't do it now, there might be a way to make it happen.
Right.
We're coming up with new things every day. But if you can't find a local organization, come out to Colorado would be my advice, and hit me up with City of Boulder, or hit up Jeffco, hit up Adaptive Adventures, hit up Crested Butte, hit up National Sports Center for the Disabled. I mean, there's like all these organizations here for skiing and mountain biking and ropes courses and sailing. I mean, there's so much out there. If you want to do it, do it. And if it's not, like, if you were into some sport like hockey before and you try it and you don't like it, there's other sports. So just get out there and try all the things until you find something you like. Just get out there. That's my advice. Get out there.
I love that advice. Also, for the record, it sounds like Boulder is the spot to be if you're a quad. So I think anybody and everybody who might want to do anything as far as accessibility in wheelchair activities, it does sound like Boulder's got to be the next vacation spot. And hitting up our friend Topher here would be quite the way to set off that vacation. So really, I appreciate you coming on. You know, I think that pretty much covers all the questions I have. I do want to take a quick moment and just shout out to everyone who's watching or listening to the podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, we'd love it if you hit the subscribe button, thumbs up icon. You know, the bell lets you know if new episodes drop. Obviously, if you're listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, a follow is always appreciated. But Topher, on behalf of all of us here at Spinal Cast, you know, I just wanted to thank you again for joining us, and the work that you do and the effort you put forth in making the outdoors accessible for other, people with disabilities is truly inspiring. And, you know, we loved having you on and really thank you for all that you do.
Awesome. Glad to be here. And, let me help out. If you need me to help out at all after this, just hit me up. I'm here.
Sounds like a great plan. Thanks, Topher, and we'll see everybody in a month.